Welcome to another summertime episode of the 3Bid League podcast. As always, I am your host, Tyler, joined by Matt. And we're going to talk at the end of the episode about some of the newcomers into the A10 that we're most excited about. But first, we're going to kick things off with a guy who somehow has not graced the airwaves of this show yet. Curry Hicks Sage of the UMass Basketball Podcast is here for the most comprehensive UMass breakdown we have had in the 4 years of this show. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys. Glad to be here. I'm glad to finally do it.
Yeah, you were long overdue. UMass has not given us many reasons to be excited, though, until now.
Tough but fair.
Frank Martin has taken over as the head coach, and you were on UMass head coaching search for really from the moment that Matt McCall got fired. You had some inside info. You had plenty of opinions. So we'll kick things off here. What's your grade for the hire of Frank Martin?
Look, with hires, it's always, hindsight is always 20/20. It's definitely an A-. It could be a B+. I don't think it'll be much worse than a B, and it could be an A. But right now, it's like on that kind of between an 88 and a 91. So like that B+, A- border.
All right, I like it. That's a specific answer. Maybe UMass hopefully gets a good curve and bump that up to a solid A. But going back to that coaching search. So obviously, I think you were the most plugged in out of anybody in UMass Twitter, hosting a bunch of Twitter spaces, you know, keeping an eye out on all of the key names to watch. But were there any other guys, like, I guess, what was your initial reaction to the Martin hire? Or was there anyone else that you really thought could do a great job at UMass?
So for those of your listeners who didn't sort of follow my endless musings on this, which became the source of borderline obsession for me to a degree that I'm both proud and embarrassed of in looking back, because I just lost it. I just got so immersed in it. And I will say, as anyone who listens to my stuff knows, like, coaching searches are kind of my thing. Like, they're really the only thing at this point in the entire sports world that I just find endlessly interesting. And so, you know, that plus the team I know and I'm really plugged in around, plus it being kind of a fairly niche thing, right? It's not like there's 50 beat reporters covering this, just gave me this like unusual, I don't want to say importance, but like I the number of like tipsters and people from all around the country that emerged to give me information throughout was crazy. I don't know if that's answering your question. Your question, sorry, was about who else we liked. So throughout the process, we were kind of like in, you know, we would have these nightly spaces, and at some points we have 400 or 500 people in there, and we'd have a lot of people throwing around ideas, and we'd have a lot of people like in, we kind of, as an online fan base, made it, we really like nerded out on it, and we were doing like our own crazy research. So like I'd get a tip and I'd have like 7 or 8 people who were helping me, and I'd be like, all right, follow this up, find out who this person's agent is, find out like, it's all these like sort of tangled web of connections, very tinfoil hatty, but fun. And over the course of that, we were also, and I was open about this, trying to kind of throw out non-traditional names to kind of just push the envelope a little and make sure, like, the thing we desperately didn't want, and I'll get to who we did want in a moment, but we didn't want kind of like a cookie cutter. There's been a lot of hires at UMass over the years in different sports where there's kind of like, with all due respect to McCall, who I got to know and like in many ways, and you know, he left in a respectful way, but like, it's this young up and coming coach without a whole lot of experience from out of region who, like, they think, okay, maybe we take a chance and he hits it big. I really wanted to avoid that. So at one point we were actually pushing kind of as a little bit ironically, but a little seriously, this guy, Ben McCollum, who's this incredible D2 coach at Northwest Missouri State. They've won like 4 of the last 5 national titles. You know, they have a kid who was like the best player on Creighton this year who had played there for a few years. He's like an unbelievably interesting person. They lost to Duke by like 4 in a preseason game. And he's definitely going to be a star at the D1 level. And I was just like, why not try something like that? You know, more realistically, you know, I mean, more kind of in the D1 range. Of the names that emerged, like it actually, well, I guess we'll never really know what happened, but Mark Schmidt from Bonaventure, there was a lot of talk, and I still believe that we were going to get him, but for the Bonaventure NIT run, which kept prolonging it, and eventually it leaked. And I had really trustworthy sources telling me that, like, it was close to a done deal, and each time Bonna kept winning, like, narrowly, and then they couldn't keep the secret, basically. It was a funny story, an old Boston Globe reporter who now does his own thing and is sort of like a little bit senile. And he basically like broke the story, and then it forced, you know, Mark Schmidt to kind of recant. And then he got an extension and more money at Bonaventure. So we'll never know exactly what happened. I really do believe Schmidt was coming, and Bonaventure fans are going to hate hearing that. And they'll say like, I'm out of my mind, but where there's enough smoke, there's fire. And I had every reason to believe like it was going to happen until they just kept prolonging their season. And he's from Massachusetts, you know, they're losing a bunch of guys. They were going to like double his pay. So I thought that was a real possibility. Other than that, like in terms of who I wanted, you know, Kamani Young, who was at UConn as an assistant, had some appeal. And there wasn't really a ton of names out there that like truly excited me beyond that. I mean, I'll tell you one other really wild thing. The word was, so early on in the process, like essentially the day after McCall was let go, which was two games before the end of the regular season, it was a very awkward dynamic. And Rick Pitino, who's a UMass alum, came out and said that Shaheen Holloway at St. Peter's, who is in Iona's league where Rick coaches now, should be the leader in the clubhouse for the UMass job. And I similarly had sort of sources, tipsters from his camp insinuating to me that he was really interested. And I'll be totally honest in the thing I botched the most. You know, I looked and I was like, you know, they're 18 and 12. Like, he's had 3-4 years of experience, but like, we don't really know what he can do. Like, it's Mac. Like, I let's see what else is out there. You know, maybe a turnover. Lo and behold, as we saw, what happens in March is, you know, guys become legends in the course of 2.5 weeks. And Shaheen Holloway, you know, after that win over Kentucky, it was like, yeah, I don't think he's going to be on the. And although crazy enough, I heard he may have even this I'll never know. I'll never be able to source fully. I heard from a couple trustworthy people that he actually talked to our AD like after that game, like in between the games, which he then went on and won. He beat Murray State next. So there was definitely contact at some point. Now, obviously, after he won 2, and then won again in the Sweet 16, like there was no chance he wasn't going to Seton Hall. But that was a name that was thrown around that I was kind of like, eh. So shows what I know, because I think Shaheen Holloway, not only because of what he did, but like I don't think that was a fluke of a run. I think he's going to be a fantastic coach for a long time. And like he runs really good offense and he plays, his team was a lot of fun. So that was a name. And then it was just a lot of like the usual, you know, sort of guys, Jared Grosso, who was at Bryant, and Bashir Mason, who's at, well, now is at, he left Wagner for.
I think he's back at St. Peter's now, isn't he?
Yeah, he went to St. Peter's from Wagner, kind of a lateral move. But the point is, You know, those kinds of names who've had some success in this part of the country. The other guy I was pushing, just like, I think is a phenomenal coach. And, you know, I don't think it was never going to go anywhere, but there's a guy named John Carroll, who until a couple months ago was the prep coach at Northfield Mount Hermon and has won a couple national titles. And Northfield Mount Hermon is basically in the backyard of UMass. And, you know, we wouldn't really get their kids. We did going back 10, 15 years, but it's an unbelievable program. They send more kids to the Ivy League than anywhere in the country and a ton of other places. And I just think I wanted him on Frank's staff. I was pretty open about that. I just think he's a phenomenal basketball mind. And I think he could have been like an interesting successor if Frank had success early and they needed someone, you know, who understood the area. But you obviously, you know, it happens. Like Danny Hurley went from high school to Wagner and it's not, but you know, again, like some of it was just like, I was always hoping, like with a lot of these names, like if you put them out there and say it enough times and kind of socialize it with the public, then it's like it, 'cause like, this is just an aside. You got me on my favorite topic here, but you know, like I think as I went really deep in the process, I kind of reaffirmed a lot of intuitions I'd always had, which is that so much of this is such a crapshoot and there are so many good basketball coaches at all different levels of the game. And obviously recruiting is so essential that like a lot of times guys who are at a Division III, II, or top tier prep level are going to get overlooked or just put on staff as an assistant instead. But some of these guys just can flat out coach wherever they are, whatever level they're at. And I was like, you know, intent on kind of at least bringing names like that into the fold and doing whatever little part I could to kind of give our athletic director cover to like, if he had to take that risk, because what I desperately didn't want is like, there was talk of, for example, James Jones at Yale, guys like that, who I just think
started that one.
Who started that one?
We definitely said in February that he would be an interesting choice.
And I think he'd be a very bad choice. Not because he's a bad coach, but he's a bad fit. And there's a lot of like, that's the big thing. I think like, you guys are Dayton guys, so Dayton is like has just unbelievable advantages. You know, it's got an amazing fan base. It's basket. The whole school is like a basketball, everything basketball. You know, it's a basketball centric place, and just an incredible fan base and great resources. And so it's a little different. Like there's a lot of guys who could fit there. Although I think Anthony Grant being an alum and like is a uniquely good one, but you know, at UMass, like fit is a really big deal. It's got its quirks, it's got its subtleties, and you need to understand the dynamics at play. And James Jones is a guy who's a pretty good coach, but in the portal era, I think he would be like horrifically suited to the UMass job, because when you're at Yale, you really can't transfer. The same is true of Tommy Amaker at Harvard. Like, you can transfer, but like, where are you going to transfer? You're at Yale. You know what I mean? Like, unless you're going to get an opportunity to play at Stanford, like, why would you leave Yale, right? So in this modern era where you have to re-recruit kids every year, Jones and Amaker and some of the top Ivy League guys, like, don't really have to do that. And so my whole concern was, like, they would not, especially at, you know, 60 years old, with all due respect, like, I just don't think that, like, when you've had success and you're established and you're 60, you want to be spending your off season like, begging a 19-year-old to return instead of leaving for, you know, to get more minutes at Drexel or whatever, you know, or to transfer up and play at Mizzou. Like, it's just a pain in the ass. So that was why I was down on the Ivy League candidates.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of great points right there. And those last couple minutes make me wonder if Curry Hicksage and UMass Twitter collectively did more due diligence than LaSalle, who struggled to find any candidate interested in the job and ended up hiring Fran Dunphy from the broadcast booth. So, I mean, that's some impressive detective work by all you guys.
Oh, we went, like, listen, I mean, truly, I my dad has been hounding me. I used to write for a lot of places and, you know, some prominent national ones at one point in a past life. So, I haven't written much in years, but my dad's been like, listen, you before you die, you need to write that entire saga up, because the world, like, because it sounds crazy, right? Like, and I don't harbor any, well, I probably harbor some delusions of grandeur here, but like, you just, there's, it gets to be a point where you're like, oh, I know, I'm like running circles around this circle. Like, it got to the point where like my boss was like, what are you doing? Cause I'd be pacing the floor, like on the phone with very prominent names in the sport, you know, because you got to realize what was wild about it for me was like, I was simultaneously playing anyway, my dad's been like, you have to write the story. And I've kind of written something out. We'll see what I do with it. But, cause of course, if I do anything with it, I'm going to lose all the sources I made, you know, no one's ever going to talk to me again. But like, you got to realize like, there's really no full-time UMass beat reporters anymore. There's like one or two cover it like fairly well and, you know, with some frequency, but they're covering other things. And so if you're trying to get like information out, and that's what this whole dynamic is, right? It's either people trying to conserve information or disseminate information. And I'm trying to make sure that the people who are trying to hide it can't, unless it's beneficial to the final product. And I'm trying to disseminate the stuff that I think can help. And I made no bones about that. I was like, I will beg, borrow, steal, manipulate, lie, do whatever I have to do to get us a good hire, because I'm just tired of losing. And I just got like unhinged in the process. But in so doing, I met like so many people, because so many people were like, you know, like when it comes right down to it, they're paying $1.7 million, right? Like there's only, I don't know, 70, 80, maybe 100 jobs in the country that pay that. And a lot of people want to coach basketball, you know? So all of a sudden, for 3-4 weeks, it's like, well, we have to talk to the guy who's like talking to their fan base and like create some pressure. You know, like, it's not like I was under no illusions that I had some unique depth or something that everyone wanted to confer with. It's just like I had a little role to play in this all. And I think it drove our athletic director bonkers. And he has since, according to sources, not permitted Coach Martin to come on the podcast, but we could talk about that another time. But it was just, it was wild. And what I was saying is like, I was playing the role in different ways of fan search committee, you know, reporter, propagandist. Like I was wearing six hats at all times. And for about a month, like I was doing this. I mean, my wife was like, it was threatening our marriage at one point. Like I say that half jokingly, but it was all consuming in a way that frankly, nothing in my tenure as a fan going back 30 some odd years to when I was 6 years old or whatever, nothing has even come close, you know, to comparing with. So it was a wild saga.
Yeah, and we know UMass Twitter basically bullied the athletic department into hiring Don Brown as the football coach. So why couldn't it be done again?
Yeah, and Don was an easier choice because Don, you know, had been at UMass, loves the area, has grandkids in the area, and was, you know, getting up there in age. I think he wanted one more shot as a head coach. So there was a logic there. And also he actually coached when he was a young man at the D3 level under our athletic director's father at Division III Plymouth State, a small school in New Hampshire. So Don, there was a more logical tie-in. But with this, you know, there's a great UConn Twitter handle, this guy, Mr. Hotballs, who always talks about, you know, jokingly, but kind of not, about the power of cyberbullying athletic directors. And the truth is, like, if you get a few hundred people who are super engaged on something, that's how you drive change, right? And all we were asking for fundamentally was, you know, things he probably wanted anyway to save his own job, which are pay the coach more money, do the right thing and get us, you know, the real deal hire. And I think Frank Martin absolutely meets that criteria.
So as a quick aside, since you just mentioned it, VCU fans, if you're listening, please bully your athletic director into changing his Twitter profile picture, because it makes him look like a bot with all of the watermarks on it. But pulling back to this,
that's a small, I don't know if that's worth the, if they, you know, you gotta use your bullying cards, play your bullying cards lightly. You know, it's like, do we want to, but VCU, do with that what you will.
Well, they've tried to use it to like get them to stop charging fees on season tickets and make their broadcast booths ADA compliant, and the athletic department has not listened to those asks.
That was a fun little saga in the offseason. I mean, during the season, the ADA compliance piece, that was a fun little A10 Twitter saga.
Yeah, and for anyone who's not familiar, one of Rhode Island's broadcasters has health concerns that really just makes it tough for him to get around. And VCU at one point had the opposing radio booth on a platform that required you to go up a stepladder and climb over a small fence to get to the broadcast booth.
Yeah, you basically had to be like an American gladiator. And the guy had a disability and was like, I can't, like, can you accommodate? And like had apparently told them in advance and they did nothing. It was a huge black eye for VCU. It was just like a really bad look.
Yeah, actually, I remember seeing too, because Dayton played VCU a few days prior, and one of Dayton's radio announcers tweeted a picture of the same, you know, little broadcast area, saying, I've never seen anything like this before. So clearly they had some time to work it out. But yeah, just funny that that happened to be VCU of all teams, given that we make fun of their arena more than anybody else in this conference.
Do you? That's your go. You make fun of them more than St. Louis?
Well, I just think the arena, I mean, I've never been to Chaffetz. It looks beautiful, but I don't know. The whole, at least in the Dayton community, the whole VCU cafeteria meme has kind of taken a life of its own the last couple of years.
It does look like, that's a good, I'd not heard that one. It does look like a cafeteria.
The cafeteria.
I mean, truth be told, I wish the Mullen Center was the exact size of the Siegel Center, because I think, unless you're Dayton, which is very unique in its ability to draw, you know, 13,000 plus, I think 7,000 is like actually the kind of ideal size for like a good, really loud A10 arena. Like I think the Ryan Center is about 7,200. And, but yeah, the Siegel Center with those low ceilings and the kind of like, I don't know, not like the concourse where it just, it, I know what you mean by the high school cafeteria. It's a good analogy.
Yeah, speaking of, that's actually a good point you bring up though with the Mullen Center. I think something Tyler and I brought up a lot on our podcast just seemed like attendance was really down at UMass games last year, and honestly, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if you had more people, you might have had more attendees on your spaces than a couple of the non-conference games. I mean, it was bleak.
Yeah,
you think that's gonna get better under Martin? I mean, I have to imagine there's more excitement around the team.
100%. And I mean, I know that their season ticket sales are already up, you know, or considerably in the last couple months. Look, like this is a long topic of conversation, you know, longstanding topic of conversation among UMass fans. But the truth is, you know, Amherst, for those of your listeners who don't know, is a solid, you know, you could get there maybe if you're driving really fast, but like an hour and 45, but it's about 2 hours from Boston, and you know, it's cold and it in the winter, and it's in a region where, you know, there's been just immense pro success, and you know, the arena can be a little bit of a hike from the main living area. When I say a little bit of a hike, I mean like 12 minutes, but if it's like 12 degrees and they're like, you know, 8-12 and they're playing Duquesne, it's like, do I really want to get up and make that walk right now? And I think with McCall, and then it's a much older fan base.
Not unlike Dayton's in some ways. There's a lot of older fans, and
I think COVID was obviously a factor. So when you combine all that with the losing and the kind of inevitability of this being McCall's last year, you know, you get really subpar attendance figures. When UMass is good, I always like to say, when UMass is good, Saturday games are close to sellouts. You know, I mean, like during the NCAA year of 2014, they sold out six times or so. Weekdays are always going to be a little tough, even if they're awesome, because a fairly substantial number. I mean, the vast majority of UMass alumni are in the eastern part of the state and in the Boston area. So unless they're like phenomenal, it's just tough to get out, you know, to get out of work and like get on the Mass Pike and drive 2 hours on a Wednesday to see, you know, all but like a top 10 type team, you know? And, but, you know, so, and the local fan base, I think McCall, you know, Western Mass is like the, like, I didn't go to UMass. I grew up there during the Calipari years. And for me and kids like me, that was our pro town, you know, like there's, it's kind of country, right? Like it's not, so we just fell in love with it because that's what was in town. Like we follow it like it was the Red Sox or something. And, but that base of fans, you know, you have to cut it. It's a like Western Mass, very different than Eastern Mass. It's almost like a more Midwestern orientation in some ways. And, you know, Matt was like a slick Southerner, right? Like it just, I think, and we saw it a little during the Travis Ford years too, like where people were just kind of like, eh, I know this guy's not long for the area. So like, I'll go when they're winning and it's exciting. But if not, like, it's not someone I'm like inclined to support. And I think that matters in a small market. And Frank, to his credit, has been just like already making appearances at, you know, local sort of like staple restaurants that are just like longtime fixtures in the area, places that, you know, Matt maybe went once in 5 years kind of thing. And Frank's wife went to UMass, and, you know, Frank had coached up here at Northeastern when he got into the college game. So he's familiar with the state, and his wife loves it here. And he just, I think, is like uniquely good already at kind of connecting with people. And he's making a really, really, really conscious effort to do that. So I think that sort of small town touch goes a long way. And then, you know, when they get good, it just kind of grows from there. But there will be substantial improvements in attendance. But, you know, to get to that next level of consistently drawing 6,000 plus a night, you got to win basketball games. Like, you know, you'll grow that, you know, you're not going to have any more of these like 1,800 people nights, but you might have some 3,500 and 4,000 nights if you're, you know, 6 and 10, you know what I mean? So, yeah.
So I actually wanted to ask something more specific about that, because Martin went on, and shameless plug here for the Plant the Flag pod with your wonderful announcer, Jay Burnham. And Martin said on there that he expects there to be sellouts this year. And so I want to ask you as the fan.
Wow, I didn't hear that yet. I gotta listen to that. Keep going.
Yeah, it's a very good pod for anyone who has not heard it.
Jay's a legend. Jay's a great guy. Just a fantastic guy. I can't say enough good things about him.
No surprise that he put together a good interview. But as really one of the leaders of the UMass fan base, what do you think the fans have to see this year for, let's say, for there to be 4 or 5 straight weekend sellouts when we get to A-10 play? Like, what does this team have to show?
I mean, I don't think you get 10. The Mullen Center, with all the chairs, I think the official capacity is like 9,490 or something, but 9,500. You throw in the chairs, I think it's basically 10,000 seats, right? And I think to sell out a 10,000 seat arena in today's modern college basketball landscape, when, you know, there's, we don't have to go over this, but, you know, there's a million options, entertainment options for people. To sell out, you got to be in the top 4 in the league, or competing right up there with it, playing good opponents and playing really hard and a quality brand of basketball. So precisely what record that is, you know, I'm loath to say, but I'm just going to be honest, they're not going to sell out if they're a middling run-of-the-mill team. You know, they might get – they'll do better attendance-wise, but – yeah, you got to be really good. And that's not just true of UMass. I think all but Dayton has to be playing really good basketball to sell out their arena. Wouldn't you guys agree? You follow
I'd
the league,
say
right?
VCU's the only other exception.
Yeah, and even VCU last year,
in eighth place, I think they can still at least get to 85%.
Yeah, but that's not a sellout. Yeah. And even that is like, you know, a team that's been in the tournament like most years in the last 10, right? Like so you know, my point is it's not a knock on the comment. It's just like whether under Frank Martin or Matt McCall, you have to win a lot of basketball games to sell out games. That being said, like if you said what is it going to take for them to get to like 6,000 fans, I'd say playing really hard, stealing a few on the road, you know, building some momentum and showing that as you get towards February and March, you're a team that could do some damage in the A-10 tournament. I mean, there is like a universe around UMass, especially with the hockey team's success. And like, there's people who want to support, you know what I mean? And I think that Frank's biggest, sort of the biggest asset of having Frank Martin at the helm is that he is a name in the sport. You know, it doesn't take a long time to explain who Frank Martin is to that kind of casual fan who might have a kid at UMass and follows the local sports scene or, you know, went to UMass 20 years ago and likes to get to a game every couple of, like, you could go up to that person and say like, yeah, Frank Martin. And even if they're like, wait, who? It's like, you know, the guy, the tough ass guy who, you know, who led South Carolina to a final. Oh yeah. Frank Martin. And many people are just going to say, Frank Martin. Wow. Like I heard him on whatever, like on this podcast, that podcast, he's a known commodity. So people are looking for reasons to be excited. And I think like he gives them one. And so just competing hard and kind of showing progress will substantially improve attendance as the year goes on.
Yeah, and so big breaking UMass news right now is as I look up to the corner of the room, UMass alum Frank Vetrano has just scored for the New York Rangers in an Eastern Conference Finals game.
So, love that. I think my boss is at the game right now. Big, I live in New York, so.
Big moment for the Minutemen hockey team. But this was one of the things that I actually mentioned when UMass hired Martin is the visibility. And it's little things like, it's 12:30 in the morning, Friday night of the NCAA tournament. There is one post-game show on the networks that show it. I think it's on True TV. And Frank Martin's the coach guest that night. And the show actually ended with him giving a speech about his love of basketball in fluent Spanish. And the host, whoever it was, just starts gushing about how charming Frank Martin is and how great it was to have him on the set that day and how if he had kids that were going to play college basketball, he would want them to play for Frank Martin. And as much as that's the guy blowing smoke, like it matters that guy is just out there. Like casual college basketball fans are watching him. They know who he is. Like you said, for the Final Four. And also I think people still remember him for the Michael Beasley teams.
Totally. Like,
the one team at Kansas
State. Totally. Totally. And you know, his network is so vast. He grew up in Miami, is so deeply rooted there. So any kid out of Miami, like he's one phone call away from, and there's a ton of talent around that whole South Florida area. He was at Kansas State, so he kind of knows the Big 12 and that landscape. He was at South Carolina, so he understands the SEC. He spent time as an assistant at Northeastern, so he knows the Boston Northeast area. And, you know, they've recruited a ton of New York City kids to South Carolina. So, like, there's just an automatic credibility there. And especially in this portal era on second chance kids and whatever, like, if, you know who Frank Martin is, right? Like, even if you don't, you know, it's like you guys, it's just like that is a great kind of stop the bleeding guy because he doesn't have to walk in and explain like, okay, I know it sounds weird, but I know we haven't been to the tournament in this long. Like, it's like, hey, we've been down. We've got the resources. They're paying me a lot of money. I know what I'm doing. I've got a 20 some odd year track record. You want to take a second chance, like at a place after you didn't get playing time at, you know, your Power Five or whatever, like come to me. And I think, you know, that's just, it's just a huge asset. And, you know, McCall and young coaches like him, you know, it's hard to make it in the A-10. It's a good league, right? And you just have to, if you don't have that credibility, you're always sort of like, you know, treading water.
Yeah, and two things that he has really hammered home so far in trying to build this culture: working hard and being disciplined. And that second one is something that was not true of the Minutemen at a lot of points in the McCall era. So he's going to bring it, and a guy this experienced, you know that he's looking for people who fit that culture first and foremost when he's doing his recruiting. So he's bringing in 5 transfers right now, all from Power 5 schools.
Seven kids total. 5, yeah, 5 Power 5 transfers. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, 2 freshmen plus a pair of guys coming with him from South Carolina, guy from Boston College, guy from Louisville, guy from UConn. So of these incoming guys, who do you feel like can be the biggest impact player for UMass this year? Maybe not even necessarily from a stats standpoint, but as a culture setter.
So it's really interesting. And going back to what you said about, you know, the hard work and discipline stuff, what's really interesting, and that I think maybe goes against maybe what I was expecting in a good or bad way, we're going to find out here, is that of the 5 you alluded to, with the exception of 1, Wildens Levesque, who's kind of a really good 4/5 man who, you know, was reliably in like 20, 25 minute a game, 6.5 and 5.5 guy who I think will fairly easily with 2 years of eligibility turn into a, you know, I think it's safe to say in the A-10, he'll be like a 10-7 guy without question, I think. With the exception of him, the other 4 are all like, there's tremendously high ceilings, but there are question marks. And I think that's okay, because I think Martin is like not a guy who's going to stand for it if you're like dogging it, right? And the question marks, you know, vary to a good degree. So you take a guy like Rasul Diggins from UConn, class of 21 kid who, you know, because of COVID, that whole sort of senior year was strange. He had offers at Kansas and Villanova. He was a top 60 kid from like one of the top prep, you know, Catholic League teams in Philly. But he went to UConn, and, you know, they had RJ Cole in his 5th year, who was like 37 years old and played 49 minutes a game. And Diggins just didn't play. And so is he going to be the kid who is recruited at Kansas and Villanova and become like an all-league A-10 guard? Well, you know, the talent is, if you trust the, you know, assessors of talent, like, he could be. Or is it going to take a while because he didn't really play at all last year, and now he's essentially having like a new freshman year, right? Like, so, and it's not a knock on the kid at all. It's just to say, like, it's not as if you know exactly what you're getting with a guy like that, right? Similarly, the kid Woodley from South Carolina, tremendous, like, physical tools, and was a freshman in the SEC and averaged like 3-3 and played like 12, 13 minutes. So again, an SEC big who's playing against a bunch of 5th-year kids in the post-COVID year and puts up some decent numbers and plays, you know, 10, 15 minutes a night. You and I both know that guy could absolutely become a dominant player in the A-10 over the course of 3 more seasons. At the same time, it's not like he like was set the ACC's, you know, hair on fire. The last 2 of the transfers, Matt Cross, I think he was a top 100 kid out of high school, was really good and started at Miami, left abruptly, went to midseason, went to Louisville. Chris Mack got fired, you know, right early on. So here's a guy who's like a monster talent from Massachusetts, tough, physical, put up really good numbers and started every game at Miami as a true freshman, and then put up pretty good numbers at, you know, at Louisville, like 5-6 points a game. He can be great. he can be great in the ACC. He can be great in the A-10. But, you know, he's on his third school in 3 years. It's like, you know, there's a lot of change. He played at a bunch of prep schools. Like, it's not like I'm expecting him to walk in and be the A-10 conference player of the year on day one. And then Johnny Thompson, you know, a Massachusetts kid from BC, just really didn't do much for BC, and it's hard to say also. So, you know, four of those five kids, it's like they could – three of them, I don't think Thompson will be in this mix, but three of those kids I think could become all-league players in their time at UMass, but I also wouldn't be surprised if none of them ever sniffed it. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a funny – and I think that's what you have to do to some extent when you're building anew. You have to take chances on certain kids. And I think Frank's done a really nice job of supplementing the transfers with really solid freshmen. And it's funny because perhaps the most undecorated kid of the seven that have signed, Keon Thompson out of Hargrave Military Academy in Virginia, I actually am maybe most excited for him of all the kids they've signed in terms of year one expected impact. Big schools were getting in the mix for him very late. So his offers list looks nothing like what was actually happening at the very end. And that's not uncommon this year with all the kids getting repeat years and teams going to the portal. This is a guy who I think has a lower, like a very high floor, maybe a little bit of a lower ceiling, but is like long, can defend, can shoot. Reminds me a little bit of like a poor man's Kyle Lofton or maybe like a Marquise Moore. And I think actually will end up competing for a starting spot as a true freshman, despite the fact that because he's not coming from a Power Five school as a transfer, the conversation around him isn't nearly what it is for some of these other kids, including his fellow freshman who's coming in. They just signed this kid, RJ Lewis, who had offers at, you know, Kansas State and is a top 150 kid and is, I think, maybe the most talented kid they're bringing in. But I think, again, he's really thin. He's like 6'6". It's going to take him some time to grow into his body. I don't expect him, you know, in year one to be the player he is in even in year two, much less year four. So a very interesting collection of kids, you know, all of whom were highly regarded out of high school. I think every one of them was like a top 200 kid other than Thompson, who interestingly enough is the one I'm most excited about.
And it's honestly almost kind of funny to hear you mention the high ceilings of all these guys, because when I think Frank Martin, like I said, I think about him talking about the culture, and I certainly think about defense. And so to me, I feel like a few of these guys, and certainly having not broken any of them down to the level that you have, I feel like some of these guys are going to have to be impact defenders for Martin to really play out his vision, given that the key guys he's bringing back, Noah Fernandes, TJ Weeks, CJ Kelly, not exactly
nope,
guys.
Kelly's now gone. It's really just TJ and Noah.
I missed that.
It's kind of just was, you know, it sort of just showed up one day in the roster. It was never really announced, but yeah, nobody's come back except those two.
Yeah. And neither of them are exactly talked about as great defenders. I would Fair. Say Fernandes, especially given his stature, is probably a decent negative on that end, actually. So
yeah, I think TJ actually can be a halfway decent defender at times, but neither – I wouldn't say either of them are defined by their defensive intensity. No, that's fair.
So, yeah, we'll see if any of these guys can come in and be impact defensive guys. And I know from what I've heard about South Carolina, Levesque is someone who definitely profiles as – a guy who maybe wasn't a defensive anchor in the SEC, but definitely could be in the A-10.
Yeah, he's
the
load.
He feels like
a
guy Martin's going to lean on.
He's a legit dude. I mean, he's going to be in his fourth year. You know, he's from Massachusetts, actually. He's really strong. He's going to be a problem on both ends in this league. I don't foresee him being, like, a dominant scorer, but I think, like, there's not going to be a lot of – like, there. I fully expect, and I've heard – through the grapevine, that this is a team that will play two true bigs pretty much at all times. Now, who that last big is going to be is kind of TBD. They still have two or three open scholarships, and Frank has indicated they just missed out on a kid today who signed at Kansas State, actually, a Virginia Tech transfer. But they are definitely pursuing another big for sure. and plant and the Woodley kid from South Carolina, you know, he played like 12, 13 minutes as a freshman. It's not like he can't make that jump in the A-10. So they've got, they're going to play big lineups. And, you know, I've cautioned UMass fans, like, this is going to be a total 180 from McCall era teams, because McCall era teams had no trouble scoring the basketball in his last couple seasons. They just couldn't guard anything. So this will be the opposite. I think there's going to be, you know, I guess you'd call it like brawl ball, you know, I mean, I think there'll be a lot of 59, 54s. And I've cautioned UMass fans that it's not always going to be pretty, particularly in year one. Because also, you know, of the roster right now, you know, the difference between like, oh, also Dominguez is back.
Is Greg Jones?
No, unfortunately, I love Greg Jones, but he's not. So, you know, but anyway, the point is, like, of players kind of 1 through 9 or so, the chasm between them, between each is pretty modest. And Frank played something like 11 guys, 10 minutes or more per game last year at South Carolina. So he will not hesitate to play a lot of guys. And it's going, you're absolutely right. Like whoever emerges as, you know, a defensive stopper, or gives you quality minutes on that end, that's the guy who is going to, you know, those are the guys who are going to play. So, and who that's going to be, we just don't know yet.
So I want to ask you to predict it then. Not the start of the season necessarily, because maybe a guy like Keon Thompson is at the end of the rotation because of his age to start the year, then has a slow breakout as the season goes on. But let's say it's late February, UMass is fighting for a double bye, and they're in a huge game against VCU, Dayton, someone else at the class of the A-10. Who do you think are the closing five at the end of the season? And who do you feel like
the closing five to end the game, or the starters in the start of the game?
The closing five, because those are the five that truly matter.
Okay. Well, I don't want to do a cop out, but I do think it'll be a little situational. But if you're, you know, kind of like, who are the guys you're leaning down on down the stretch? I would say Noah Fernandez has to be there, because Noah Fernandez is like one of the better guards in the league. He was really good last year
until he got hurt.
Yeah, but then he came back and he scored like 30 against Dayton. I mean, he was really good. You know, he only got hurt. Yeah, like I guess he had it. He averaged like 16 or 17 points. I mean, like, there's not much more he could have done. I would say Noah will be there. Levesque will be there. Very possibly a big that is yet to be signed, just because of the way that Frank likes to play. So whether it's that person or Woodley, it'll be one of the two. I just continue to believe that, especially if they're going to go two bigs, that they can kind of go with two quasi point guards, and that Keon Thompson's steadiness, I just have a really good feeling about him in terms of like what he brings to a Frank Martin club in particular. And then I absolutely think Matt Cross. I mean, Matt Cross will be your glue guy as long as he, you know, is locked in and, you know, is like, you know, look, it's tough when you're at your third school in 3 years. There's no denying that. But his abilities, he's 6'7". He can shoot the hell out of the ball. He's a great rebounder. Like, he's going to be hard to keep off the floor. So I would say Noah, Cross, Levesque, another big, whoever that ends up being, and Keon Thompson. But TJ Weeks will not, you know, he's a shot maker, right? Like, he's going to be hard to keep off the floor if he's making shots. So I think that kind of combination of five or six guys will be the core at the end. But that's very tough to say, because a guy like RJ Lewis, you know, from Miami, who is like a monster talent, 6'6", when you just don't know how quickly he'll get it together. Like, there's no doubt talent-wise, you know, sky's the limit for him. And like, but, you know, you just don't know. Like, does he get it together by this February, or does he get it together by next, you know, December of 2023? Who knows? I it's too hard to say.
Yeah, and I'm gonna ask you here to make an even tougher prediction. Let's say we peer into the crystal ball and there's two UMass guys that make all conference next year. I think we'd all agree Noah Fernandes is by far the most likely to be one of those two. So I'll let you kind of guess on some ceilings here. Who do you think would be the second?
I think you'd have to go, well, do we count all rookie teams?
I'm saying like one of the actual 18 best players in the conference.
Okay. I would say Levesque as like a third teamer. Just because I think he may end up being like 10-10 and 2.5 blocks. You know, like he's just going to do a lot on the stat sheet. And like, you know, I feel like if it's coaches who vote on that, I always forget, like, there's going to be enough games where like
coaches, we don't know. No one.
Yeah. There's going to be enough games where like five or six games where he's just going to be like a monster against some team. And they're going to be like, well, I guess I got to give the Levesque kid a third team. You know what I mean? It's like that kind of thing. So I think those would be the two. And I think the fringe one where like the biggest wild card, I think in terms of ceiling, now that we're talking about it, is definitely Cross. He's done it. The tools are there. You know, I think the A-10 is a good level for him. By the same token, like anytime it's someone's third school in 3 years, you know, and he Miami 14 games in, like, you just don't know, you know, like kids are kids and like, we'll find out. Like, I just don't know enough to be like, yeah, this is the second coming, you know? But I think, you know, if you, there's a reason he had offers everywhere out of high school and you know, he's really good.
Yeah, and basically what you have said just justifies how I think of this team right now. UMass is absolutely going to be the hardest team to predict when it's October and we're trying to make our standings. Like, there's so much raw talent on this team, and maybe it hits this year, maybe it hits next year, maybe it never hits. For the A-10's sake, I really hope it's one of those first two.
Yeah, I mean, you're 100% right because, you know, yeah, I mean, look, like, there's question marks abound, but there's also, like, definitely some real tools there, you know? And I don't think the same – and there are winners there. I mean, most of these kids, you know, even, like, Diggins is coming from UConn and – South Carolina had some success last year. They were, you know, substantially above 500. And, so I do, you know, and I would be thrilled if they brought in a guy from like a lower level that has won. I just think like, you know, Frank kind of cleaning house is a function of that group under McCall. They had some nice kids. They had some, but there just was not, you know, to be quite frank, that kind of maniacal intensity and focus on winning and like obsession on winning that you kind of need to distinguish yourself from a middle of the, you know, bottom of the middle of the pack to a top of the pack team. And I think Martin, that's not really going to be a question with him. You know, he's old school. Do his methods, you know, do they still totally work? I don't think he's as good a coach as he was 10 years ago. I also think 10 years ago, he's one of the best up-and-coming coaches in the game. I still think he knows what the hell he's doing and, definitely knows what the hell he's doing. And I think the experience at South Carolina will in some ways prove helpful. And I think the second, like, there's just a bounce in his step. You know, you talk to people around him and they're just like, you know, he was kind of gloomy at the end there and it was like, just the SEC is a crazy, crazy world. And I think that Amherst is a really good fit for him. And I think he will make it work. And I'm overall very optimistic.
Yeah, we are as well. And I want to close things out with this final question for you. So I want you to predict here, which will have more? UMass alums, goals scored in the Stanley Cup final, two possibilities there with Vetrano, and I don't know how to say your guys' stud defenseman's name.
Kale McCarr.
Okay, Kale I was McCarr. Actually right. So combined goals by Vetrano or McCarr in the Stanley Cup final, and it's possible that neither of them make it, versus times that you fall asleep while hosting a Spaces during next basketball season.
Wow, you've done your research here, and I just want to declare for the fans that I think on two occasions I ended the show, or rather didn't end it and just fell asleep during it. Once was after a very fun party, one of the first times I've gotten to go out during COVID. And by the way, at that party, it's a friend's 42nd birthday party, I met the aunt of a Bonaventure cheerleader on the day that there was that tussle with the St. Louis cheerleaders. And she was texting her in real time, getting me the full story. So I came back a little drunk from that, and I passed out and snored my way through. And apparently people were still listening, so that's on them.
Well, and that was the UMass GW A-10 tournament game night, correct?
No, it would have been the night after.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. It would have been when you guys lost to Dayton.
Yeah, maybe there was the night after that, because that was a Friday. It was a Saturday party. Anyway, I will say – wait, so you're saying how many times I fall asleep during the next season?
Yeah.
I mean, there's probably going to be one, and I think there'll be more than one goal scored. So I'm going to say hockey. But that's a great question. It's a very good question.
All right, we'll see what happens. I'd say Kale McCarr's probably going to be good for at least one goal in the finals.
Oh, 100%.
I also just think the Avalanche are going to win the cup, but nobody cares about my hockey opinions because they aren't good. But we will see what happens. Curry Hicks Sage, any good work coming down the pipe, and where can people find your work?
Well, Curry Hicks Sage on Twitter. We do a lot of spaces in the off season. I will caution you that they often veer into a very unrelated to Atlantic 10 basketball realm, just because it's, you know, June and there's only so much to talk about. Maybe writing a thing about the search. We'll see. Although I probably wouldn't drop that till closer to next season. And then, you know, we'll have interesting guests on the pod, and you know, if you want to go back and listen, we've had John Calipari, we've had Matt McCall, we've had a lot of like prominent, I don't know if you know, Dan Wetzel was a UMass alum. He's come on, and a bunch of fairly prominent names. So there's some good material stashed away if you're a UMass fan just coming to this. And then just look for me on Twitter. I'm easy to find. And thank you guys for doing what you do. I think you bring a level of professionalism and seriousness to it. That's great. And I think it's always good when A-10 people connect and kind of build the brand our way and organically and kind of grassroots wise. I think that really helps. And I am constantly connecting with Power 5 conference people who are just like, yeah, A-10 Twitter is like better than our conference, you know? And I think that's a testament to you guys and plenty of others. And I think also everybody brings a different, you know, little thing. Like I have my style. It's a little more irreverent, a little more, you know, out there sometimes. And, you know, I do my bits, but you guys bring a seriousness to it and really good insights. And just, there's so many people across the league. It's always fun to connect. So thanks for doing it. And I hope you guys will keep it up.
Yeah, and we got to thank you not only for coming on the pod, but delivering as basically the A-10's grandmaster of the spaces.
I appreciate that.
If anyone has never experienced a Curry Hicks Sage space, it's an interesting experience. It's an entertaining experience, and it's often an acquired taste. Experience.
It's an acquired taste, and they go as short as 40 minutes and as long as 4.5 hours. And sometimes they're sponsored by our iconic 5 college movers. Got to give them a shout out.
Who we are not blocked by, like apparently half of A-10 Twitter.
Yeah, I don't know what that's about. I'll have to talk to Pat. I feel like I just found out our biggest booster who donated the practice facility blocked me. So who knows? I feel like sometimes people who aren't like keenly aware of, maybe he just hates me, but aren't keenly aware of how Twitter works. Like kind of like instead of muting or something, they'll just like block reflexively. And like, you'll be like, oh, whatever I do to you. But maybe they just hate me. So.
Yeah. We're only blocked by one person. That is Michael Hughes. We don't understand it, but
wait, who's Michael Hughes from? Is he play for Duquesne?
Duquesne Center.
He used to.
Oh, I love that. That's flattering.
And we loved Michael Hughes. That's the funny part. That's the funniest part.
Had to be a misunderstanding. I don't know what happened.
Us complaining about him committing too many fouls at half court, which was completely right.
Yeah, I mean, there's some thin-skinned Atlantic 10 basketball players over the years. I won't mention one, but a transfer of UMass. Like, I made a very – or he's –
I guess he's graduating, a very tame comment once. He searched his name, found it, and sent me probably a 250-word, actually a pair of 250-word missives in my DMs about how I better keep my name out of his mouth and this and that. And I was just like, I didn't blow him up. I could have, because it clearly made him look like the asshole. But do you guys curse on here?
We don't not curse.
You're pretty straight laced though. I feel like you guys keep it pretty clean on here. I'm impressed.
We've never cursed enough to have to put the explicit label on, but you are not the first person to ask. So.
All right. Well, I hope I don't get bleeped. I apologize. It was not for shock.
Pretty
values.
Sure you won't.
Okay, great. Yeah. Thanks for having me, guys. Enjoy it. And I'm sorry I took up so much more of your time than anticipated.
Well, when things are this good, we just keep the microphone rolling. So Curry Hicks Sage, thank you for joining us.
All right, guys, have a good night.
All right, we are now going to go through and pick our mid-off-season all newcomer teams. Basically, just buying stock in 5 incoming transfers or freshmen that we like so far. Really hard to pick out guys at this point. I know, like, for me especially, I have not dug into the depths of a lot of these freshmen at all so far because of all the transfers coming in. So we are definitely going to miss on some players here who are going to be good. But, man, I know for me, I just assembled a list of 5 guys that I feel very confident are going to be good players in this league immediately.
Yeah, that's what I tried to do. I have a list of guys. I don't even know which 5 I'm going to talk about. I just have some notes scattered about. But
yeah, I have
it's June, so don't hate too much if we miss your favorite team's like best incoming freshman or transfer. Because there's a good chance that I don't even know who that is yet. But the A-10, I mean, it does seem like a good year for the conference, especially with the portal. Seems like some pretty talented players have been coming in of late, so. Hopefully it works out this year, but you want to start it off, Tyler, with one of your top newcomers of the league?
I will say real quick here, there's an insane amount of talent coming in this offseason. Part of it is just the bigger portal. But I look at situations like VCU, where maybe one of the two between Zeb Jackson or Alfonso Billups doesn't have a breakout this year. But I feel very confident one of them is. We got to just try to be right on that pick. And I think it's the same thing for Davidson with Reed Bailey and Connor Coquera. One of them's going to have a great year and be their go-to forward. We just got to try to figure out which one. So I guess I will kick things off then with an incoming small conference transfer. And that's Kyrell Luke, who was the Patriot League Freshman of the Year. He's heading to St. Bonaventure, a little 5'10 point guard. Put up 13 points a game. Was actually a great rebounder for his minuscule size, 3.6 a game. 2.5 assists on a mediocre, edging on bad Holy Cross team. Was a decent shooter from 3 at 35%. And look, it's not going to be a great year for St. Bonaventure. They're middle of the pack at best this season. But this is a guy that, with some A-10 talent around him, the chance to distribute more could certainly be a very good lead guard. And I think going forward, St. Bonaventure's best guy next year is either going to be him or Daryl Banks, who is the leading scorer for St. Peter's. Kind of the forgotten man from that Cinderella team when he was the guy who destroyed Kentucky. That was the single most impressive thing anyone did in that tournament for St. Peter's. I think either Banks or Kyrell Luke is going to end up as a back-end all-conference team guy. Because, you know what, Bonaventure is not going to challenge for a double bye this year, but they got a lot of solid talent. And I, right now, just simply don't see them as a pillow fight team. I think they're going to earn their way into the middle. And I'm betting on Kyrell Luke as a key cog. He's the Bonaventure point guard now for the next 3 to 4 years.
Yeah, this is a discussion for a much later day, but it's hard to picture St. Bonaventure in the pillow fight discussion, although you look at their roster right now. I mean, shoot, if Mark Schmidt gets them to 500 in the conference, I think that would be a pretty tremendous accomplishment. But That's a good call, Gal. I mean, somebody on their team. I don't know if we know who, just because none of them are really highly ranked guys. They're all coming from mid-majors, so we don't know who's going to break out there, but I'm sure Schmidt's going to find some diamonds in the rough. But with that, I'll actually keep it in the Patriot League with another transfer, and that's Neil Quinn going to Richmond. A 7-footer, all-conference player, averaged 14.7 points a game, 7.5 rebounds, and then 4 assists as a big man. So seems like he could be a guy that could emulate the Grant Golden skill set. And I also thought this was interesting. So Lafayette, where he came from, they were terrible. They went 10-20. But they were 3rd in the country in assists to field goals made ratio. So presumably that was a team that moved the ball around a lot. And that's what Richmond likes to do. They're not going to be dominated by one star, even if Tyler Burton, who by the time this podcast comes out, we'll know if he's returning or not. But the Spiders like to pass the ball around the court. They don't just hold on to the ball and, you know, do ISO stuff. So I think Quinn is just going to be a good scheme fit for Chris Mooney.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see how he fits with Matt Grace. Maybe they try to play both of them together. I think Grace is still ideally a center. And so that was the biggest reason why I left Quinn off in my honorable mentions. I just don't know if he's going to be a starter, but he's definitely going to be an impact guy. And he should also help Richmond on the defensive end a little bit more than their last few centers have.
Yeah, hopefully. We'll see. At Richmond, though, it's just a question how much talent they're going to have around Quinn also. And a lot, too. It depends on Burton, but we'll see.
All right, so I'll move on to one of my two freshman picks. And we talked about him in one of last month's episodes, which – by the way, if you have not listened to our last few off-season pods, they're all still just as relevant as when we recorded them. So go back and take a listen there. We go in depth about Davidson, Fordham, VCU, and St. Louis's off-seasons. So just go back and find those. But one of the guys that we raved about, Joe DeMartin, came on and talked up Reed Bailey, who's coming into Davidson. 4-star, 6'10" wing scorer who had a fair amount of Power Six offers coming to him. And we've seen with Bob McKillop, he likes to bring freshmen along slowly, unless you're amazing, and then you're going to play 36 minutes immediately right off the bat. And a kid with Reed Bailey's talent is not going to Davidson to play like Des Watson level minutes next year. This is a guy that I'm sure has sat down with McKillop and had a conversation that he is going to have a chance to become a key cog of this team early. And they need wing scorers so, so, so badly with Hyungjoon Lee and Mike Jones moving on. They're going to need somebody for Foster Lawyer to distribute the ball to. I think Reed Bailey's, to me, given the opportunity he's going to have, probably my super early favorite to be the freshman of the year.
Yeah, I think that's a good pick. And I think he's going to fit really well with Sam Meninga in the front court too, because we all know Meninga is going to be a tank. They don't need Reed Bailey to bang in the paint quite as much. And he is a guy that, you know, kind of a late bloomer, hit a late growth spurt. So probably not going to be a huge physical specimen in his first year, but I agree. I think his skill set's going to work out really well for Davidson, and definitely seems like a guy that's going to get a lot of minutes from day one. So he was a guy I had on my short list. Another freshman too I wanted to call out, who's been on the radar for a while.
Whoa, sorry, like, we got to take a quick time out here.
Oh, do we have breaking news?
Tyler Burton is going back to Richmond.
Wow.
So Richmond, maybe not a pillow fight team.
Maybe not, probably, but maybe not. I actually have no idea, but that's good for the A-10.
Actually, probably not.
How many? Are there 6 pillow fight teams?
No. Okay.
Yeah, we'll have to do the math on this
off air, but
St. Bonaventure and Richmond might be.
They're definitely no longer among the worst teams in the league.
Yeah, that's good for Richmond. All right. Well, another freshman, though, I wanted to call out Justin Fernandez. for George
Mason.
That
was actually one of my five.
Yeah, I feel like what I like about him, he seems like a super athletic wing, all-around skill set, can shoot and drive well. And I just feel like he's going to be a good fit for Kim English's offense. Seems like a team that has thrived a lot more on athleticism compared to just the plodding basketball that we saw under Dave Paulson for years. So I'm interested there. I feel like you pair him with Ticket Gaines and then Josh Oduro, who developed into maybe one of the quickest big men in the conference. That's just going to be a lot of athleticism on the court for Mason. Should be a really quick lineup. So interested to see what he does from day one. Another guy too, with several high major offers. So think he can contribute right away.
Yeah, and one of the big reasons why I liked him so much is he showed up second semester last year. And mm-hmm. So he's been practicing with this team for 6 months now. His skill set seems to be a natural fit to just slide into Deshaun Schwartz's starting role. And he's in a position there where the pressure will not be on him early on either end. He can kind of slowly work his way in. Ticket Gaines is going to guard the other team's best forward. Devon Cooper is going to handle the bulk of the wing scoring. So Fernandez is going to be able to come in and kind of feel his way into these games early on. But one of the things that stood out to me is certainly the most impressive thing that Kim English has done at George Mason so far is recruit. He did a great job assembling a roster on the fly last year. And he's only bringing in two freshmen this year. And after he got the second commitment, he flat out came out and publicly said that he was done recruiting high school kids for the year because he feels like transfers are just a better path to go at this point, but that he couldn't pass up the opportunity to get Fernandez. Feels like he's a perfect, perfect fit for his system. And you never know when coaches say this in recruiting, whether it's true or not, but he claims he was his number one target from last fall. And just kind of looking around, I have to agree with how he's going to slide into this team.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, we'll see, but got to be the highest rated freshman Mason has had in some time. I can't think of anybody under
certainly Paulson. In the A-term time.
Yeah.
So I'll go next to a guy that I've already talked about pretty frequently on this pod, so I'll keep it quick here. And that's Seb Jackson going to VCU. Look, VCU, for them to be in the top four solidly, needs either Jackson, the incoming top 100 freshman Alfonso Billups, or Jameer Watkins. They need one of those three to at least be a fringe all-conference guy to help out Ace Baldwin on the wing, replace all the production they lost from Vince Williams and Keyshawn Curry. My bet is on Jackson, who was just a destructive scorer in high school, put up 26 points a game, led his team deep into the high school playoffs, and then just kind of disappeared at Michigan. We talked about it on the VCU pod. He had COVID multiple times. And I trust the Phil Martelli to Jimmy Martelli connection here, that after such a disappointing time at Michigan, he ends up on a team that was going to be able to get a great scouting report on him and ends up on another very, very high quality program where if things don't go right for him, he's going to be glued to the bench immediately. I don't think that's going to happen. I think it's going to be the opposite. And if I had to guess who VCU's leading scorer for next year is, my first guess would be Zeb Jackson.
Wow. Yeah, I like that pick. And, you know, I am super high on transfers coming from big-time programs like Michigan. And that'll be coming up later on, too, with some other guys. My only hesitation is just, I think Jaden Nunn is maybe my biggest breakout player as a spoiler for some of our preseason work coming up. I'm really high on Nunn. I just wonder how much playing time there's going to be for Zeb Jackson and some of the other guys coming back too that you mentioned. But overall, I mean, VCU is going to have a ton of talent in the backcourt and on the wings. So definitely an opportunity where he can establish a role, certainly more than what he had at Michigan.
Well, and by the way, I think Jameer Watkins' eventual destiny is a fair amount of minutes at the four.
Yeah.
That clears out a chunk of wing minutes as well.
Mm-hmm. I guess, sticking to that type of player coming from a great program, we really didn't talk about him quite as much as I was hoping with Sage, but I'm excited to see Rasul Diggins at UMass coming over from UConn. Played very sparingly, but I do feel like as a combo guard, he could fit pretty well with Noah Fernandes. That could be an exciting backcourt. And he can't really go off the stats he put up because there just simply weren't any. But this is a guy that had offers out of high school from Villanova, Kansas, and Xavier, among others. So clearly very talented, top 60 recruit out of high school. And I think Frank Martin, coaching in a power conference for many years, he's probably got some experience coaching these types of talents. So I'm really excited about that. As we talked about in the previous hour of this podcast, there's a lot of guys that could step up for UMass, and we don't really know who it's going to be yet. But Diggins is probably my pick as the impact newcomer for the Minutemen.
So what was going to be my fifth guy and my pick for the best incoming role guy into this conference is actually Wildens Levesque. And it goes into what we talked about with Sage earlier, that UMass needs a defensive anchor. And Wildens Levesque showed that he could potentially be that guy in South Carolina. Now, he was going up against guys like Oscar Tshiebwe, who won National Player of the Year. So you go back and look at the stats that some of these centers put up against him, and it doesn't look great. But these were incredible, incredible players that he was tasked with trying to stop. And I think he becomes the anchor for the UMass defense. I think he, of any of these incoming transfers, has one of the best chances to be a huge impact with bad stats guy.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. I don't think he's going to be flashy. Certainly seems like he was anything but that at South Carolina, but that'll just be exciting too, that UMass is finally going to have a true big man that can play defense, because they did not have that at all last year. So I think that's a good pick. I'm kind of surprised you haven't mentioned, well, the guy I'm thinking of, but really for Duquesne, there's a couple options here.
Day-Day Grant was my replacement for Justin Fernandez. So
okay, well, I actually wasn't going to talk about Day-Day Grant. I had Tevin Brewer on my list, so we can hit on both of them if you want. But
we probably shouldn't, but oh well.
No, we definitely shouldn't. But one of the key problems with Duquesne last year that seems like we talked about a lot is that they just didn't have a true point guard. And I think Tevin Brewer's presence is going to alleviate some of those pains. A third-team all-conference at a Conference USA. He played for FIU the last couple years. 10th best assist rate in college basketball, and he led Conference USA in that mark. So that should certainly help free up Duquesne's offense quite a bit. Also a really good three-point shooter. So at 5'8", maybe he's the next coming of Tavian Dunmartin, but I'm excited to see what he can do. And before we move on, just a quick trivia question. Do you have any idea which former Atlantic 10 player joined Tevin Brewer on the third team of Conference USA? I feel like there's got to be a couple transfers into that conference, but there's one pretty key one, I think.
See, my mind's still on Day-Day Grant and the, like, eight good A-10 players that are in the MAC right now.
Well,
it's somebody that's on a team that I always forget is in Conference USA, because of all 32, I have less of a grasp on that conference than any of them.
It could be. I think it has 16 teams in the league, but it's Carl Pierre, who played for Rice last year.
Oh, my God, he still had eligibility.
He did, apparently. I was surprised when I was doing some homework on Tevin Brewer, but yeah, it's true. All right, let's hear about Day-Day Grant.
All right, so the man who is going to be the ultimate good stats, bad team guy out of these transfers, although Duquesne somehow now has two really good point guards who are probably going to start next to each other after having flat out zero for the last year and a half. Day-Day Grant, 4.1 assists a game, fifth in the MAC, put up 17.5 points, was a good rebounder too at 6'2", at almost 5 a game. He's going to have to play off the ball a little bit more because of the presence of Tevin Brewer. And I think Brewer becomes the de facto point guard because of not only the higher assist count, but just kind of default because of his small stature. I think Day-Day Grant ends up being the best player on this team from a stats perspective. He's going to carry a big chunk of the scoring load. Brewer's going to be more so kind of setting people up. And when he's setting up Day-Day Grant or Trey Williams, he's going to keep racking up assists. But right now, the forward core is still pretty shaky right now on this team. So I think there's going to be a fair amount of great passes that just lead to missed shots. So I'll take Grant as the breakout guy for Duquesne. Somebody who was clearly Miami of Ohio's best player last year on what was an improved Miami, Ohio team. The Redhawks were actually decent last season. Not their normal basement spot.
Not quite as bad, but yeah, I mean, almost definitely going to be some.
They're actually probably good enough to be qualified to go play at UD Arena again.
I don't know about that. Well, Dayton's still going to be scared of that game for some time. Maybe not. We'll see. But I think I've got one more pick, unless I've miscounted. And at this point, I don't really even know.
This is your fifth guy.
You know what? We'll give a shout out to St. Joe's, because why not? I think St. Joe's is just, they're going to be flat out bad next year. But I'm kind of interested to see what they get out of Christian Winborn, who seems to me like he could potentially be the starting point guard, because I don't see too many other options right now looking at the Hawks roster. And Billy Lang has had some success with guards in the past. I mean, Jordan Hall and Eric Reynolds were probably his two best recruits. So maybe adding to that backcourt pedigree that he's developed. And Winborn has had some good power conference offers, Northwestern, Kansas State, to name a few. So interested there. And he's also got a 6'5 wingspan. So, you know, we know with Jordan Hall, I think St. Joe's benefited having a point guard with some length. So not going to quite be the same type of player, but I'm just interested to see. I think that could be another case of a good stats, bad team guy, but maybe someone with an immediate impact.
Yeah, I just hope that they have somebody on that roster that can pass the ball to Eric Reynolds.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that'll be him. I just, right now, you know, losing Jordan Hall, that is a huge absence for the Hawks. So somebody's going to have to run that offense and rack up some of the assists, especially if they're going to insist on jacking up a ton of three-pointers again.
Yeah, we will see what happens on that St. Joe's team. The roster is looking bare right now. So I want to close things out here with one question, because the rosters are basically set. Most teams have one or two scholarships left open at the max. So for you, who has won this offseason in the A-10?
You know, we haven't talked about them at all, but I can't help but think Archie has done a pretty tremendous job bringing in talent at Rhode Island. And
they,
it's not a
team. No big men. That's why I'm not picking them.
Yeah, but Archie also went to the tournament with Dayton in a season when they had no big men. So that's why I'm not quite as concerned. I mean, I think they're going to want to find somebody eventually, but he kind of thrived at Dayton with undersized power forwards and centers. So I don't know if that's a huge issue. And you look at, we haven't talked about any of them specifically yet, but they recently brought in Anthony Harris from North Carolina. They got a four-star recruit that was initially committed to Seton Hall and redshirted last year. So talent-wise, I think Brody's in a decent spot, although it is a matter of how it's all going to come together.
Oh, and we should note that we made Breon Freeman ineligible to be selected in our buying stock exercise, because we both would have taken him. He's going to be great with actual good players around him and not just a bunch of chuckers.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I was going to take VCU because I think that they just brought in the best group of talent. But if we're talking whole offseason, like, they also lost a lot. And you can't fault them for Williams and Curry leaving. They both graduated. They both played their full 4 years. But in an ideal world, you keep one of them. And in an ideal world, you definitely keep either Hassan Ward or Mikael Brown-Jones from transferring. And while they've managed to fill out the big man rotation, there's just not a lot of continuity there. So I'm actually going to take UMass because of the overhaul. And everything that we spent the beginning of this pod talking about, the culture's different. I think that they are going to be able to bring a lot more fans into the building. And plain and simple, they got a coach who's just better than what their program level's been in the last decade. Frank Martin is a damn good coach. And he is going to turn UMass into a good program again. He's going to fix the defense. He's going to fix the culture. And the talent they brought in is kind of insane. There's so many high ceiling guys on that team, like Sage talked about. And like, it's not crazy to think that UMass could be in the top four next year. I don't think it's going to happen, but it's now not crazy. And what they've done in the last 2 months and basically just overhauling the entire identity of that program is something that we definitely did not expect when people weren't even 100% sold on McCall being fired.
Yeah. No, I mean, UMass, for all we've talked about tonight, I'm more excited about UMass than I was before. And it'll just be cool to see a new era begin. Also, we can't forget, Loyola is a winner. They're joining a Power 8 conference, so big upgrade for the Ramblers.
Yeah, and I just kind of love all the random pieces that Valentine found in the transfer portal. Like, he just grabbed four guys that should all be decent role players, and if one of the four is borderline all-conference, then they're going to be pretty good next year.
Yeah. One more team, too. Like, if, you mentioned with VCU losing a bunch of guys, I think if we want to give a team credit for keeping a bunch of guys, St. Louis getting Yuri Collins back from the portal and then also getting Javonte Perkins to use another year of eligibility. Plus, they got a few good transfers that we didn't really talk about tonight. I think they're in good position now. And, some people will tell you that the conference goes through Chaffetz Arena. Not me, but some people will say that.
Yeah, and you know what? There's a lot of flashy options as to who won the offseason. But let's be clear. The real true deep winner is Dayton. Like, we never even heard a murmur that any of their top seven guys were leaving. They brought in a top 100 recruit. They have another top 100 recruit who rode the bench the entire season and still stayed. Like, they have made no flashy moves since they signed Mongolian Mike back in January. And the fact that we haven't talked about them at all is a very good thing.
I don't know if we can call Dayton the winner, though, when they didn't get another point guard. Like, that was the big
hope.
They
still have one scholarship left. So
they've got time. We'll see.
I still expect them to land some, like, three-star high school kid who's fine with not playing. So,
yeah. Hopefully. Who lost the offseason real quick before we go? Is it GW? They lost pretty much everybody.
It's probably St. Joe's. Because Hall and Funk both left. They did absolutely nothing big to get them back, to replace them. They landed that DeZuni kid from Vanderbilt, and then he decommitted like 3 weeks later.
After the first practice.
Like, it's been a really, really bad offseason for St. Joe's.
Yeah, that's
it's,
a good point.
It's either them or LaSalle to me. It's somebody in Philadelphia.
Yeah. Very bad things are happening in Philadelphia. Nothing's changed during our podcast.
It is always foggy and bleary in A-10 Philadelphia. And with that, I say thank you to all of you for listening to this off-season episode of the 3-Bid League podcast. Go back and listen to our episodes from the end of April. We talk about the off-seasons for VCU, St. Louis, Davidson, and Loyola Chicago. I don't even remember at this point. We're not editing that out either because no one's actually still listening at this point. And if you are, thank you. We will be back on the back part of June with some more episodes as the offseason heats up, as TBT comes around the corner. Thank you all for listening. Enjoy the beautiful summer weather that is now upon us. And if you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review on iTunes. Stay classy, A10.